Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Chris. I'm here with Kate and Kristen, and we are starting Aftermath today. I'm excited. I've been waiting for this one.
Yes.
Woo.
Same. Also, this episode is the answer to the life, the universe, and everything, so, you know.
That's true. I mean, this episode in particular, but really aren't all our episodes.
Yep.
No.
We are smart.
No.
S-M-R-T. Isn't that a Simpsons thing?
My dear, you missed a letter.
I know. Isn't that a Simpsons thing?
No. Yes? No. Yeah. I don't remember that one.
Yeah.
Is it?
Homer goes, I am so smart. S-M-R-T. Wait, S-M-A-R-T.
Oh my god. I haven't seen that one.
Wow. We found a Simpsons reference that Kate didn't get.
That's really funny because that's like the only one I know.
Now I need to know what season that's from because like...
I don't know. I'll look it up. I'll look it up while we're doing beer.
Okay, great.
Or drinks, sorry.
Yeah, speaking of...
beer talk for me.
Kristen, what are you drinking?
Oh, I'm so tired.
I'm drinking a lovely Breakside Stay West India Pale Ale. Breakside Brewery is one of my favorites in Portland. And they do kind of a cool thing where they have a couple different locations in the city. They kind of have one closer to North Portland. They have one over in Northwest that's relatively new. And then I think they have one that's kind of like in like West Lynn or something. It's kind of like a little bit more suburban west of the city. But or east of the city. Oh my god, my brain. But they actually do kind of like different brewing at each one of those things. So they have like their flagships that they'll have at all the brew pubs. But then like in their North Portland brewery, they kind of do like some of their experimental stuff. And like in Northwest, they do like a lot more of their IPAs that like are, I don't know, specifically IPAs. So this is one of the ones from the Northwest brewery. And it's good. And it's 7% alcohol by volume. And it's good.
All right.
It says, true to the Pacific, citrusy, refreshing, kind of magical, which checks out.
That's beautiful. Is there any reason why they brew specific ones in specific places? Like the air is different or is it arbitrary?
No, I think it's just like what they ended up doing when as soon as they like started, because they only used to have the one place and they were like, well, we kind of want to like keep doing the cool shit that we're doing here. So we're opening up this other place where we also are going to have brewing equipment. So like, let's kind of do something else different and cool, I guess.
Cool.
I don't know. They're nice guys. They always give me lots of Fuebio.
That's great.
Nice.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing because Chris is just like, I had to tell Chris to stop slurping his tea.
It's hot.
So what does slurping do?
It makes it, makes it so I don't have to like touch it as long. This is the thing. Whatever. Anyway, as Kate said, I'm drinking tea. I just wasn't really feeling alcohol tonight. We drank a lot over the weekend, so taking a day off.
See, you're taking the day off. I got rejected from 3 grad schools in the space of like 4 days.
Yeah, well.
So I've got some.
Oh Lord.
Some gin. What?
Nothing.
It is not that much.
Okay.
Gin.
Just for the record, everybody, Chris is trying to tell me how much you're drinking.
Again, because it worked so well for me last time.
Yes. So I'm drinking some gin that Chris got us from Japan.
I did not get from Japan.
Sorry. I'm so tired.
I would love to have gone to Japan and brought you back gin, but I did not.
Let's get gin from Japan, guys. Gin there?
They do.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
No, it's actually from Japan.
Yes. No, it is literally from Japan.
Oh, I see.
Chris's parents were there, and they got us some gin for Christmas. And by us, I mean mostly me, because yours doesn't really usually drink gin. But anyway, it is called Roku Gin, not to be confused with the TV boop button thing.
Boop.
And yeah, fun fact that I learned from Chris, actually, when he started getting big into whiskey, is that apparently some of the best whiskey in the world comes from Japan. And so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That was a face. There was a weird face you made.
It's because my tea's hot.
This is a, there's a lot to do with Chris's. This is a lot of hot tea talk.
Chris. Anyway, so yeah, I guess they are distilling other things also. So yay, Japan.
Woo.
Yeah.
Okay, it's from season 5, the 3rd episode of season 5. Homer goes to college.
Oh my god, this is horrible.
Yeah, I think we're all disappointed in you.
I'm disappointed.
I know you were included in that all.
Man, I like literally only did that for you because I was like, oh, Kate's going to get it. It's a Simpsons reference. But that, I also know no other Simpsons references besides money can be exchanged for goods and services. So
I am pretty sure this is like the first Simpsons reference that I've missed since I was 10.
Yeah, that checks out.
Possibly.
Checks like, out. I'm kind of not kidding. Wow. All right, well, I'm quitting the pod to go, you know, throw myself off.
Watch The Simpsons for 15 more years.
Okay.
Yay. Right.
Seems fun.
That seems better. Don't die.
All right, anyway.
On that anyway, uplifting note.
So Star Wars.
Oh, and my tea is roasted almond tea from Capital Teas, which is a local DC kind of mini chain that sells like artisan teas. And it tastes like drinking apple pie out of a cup. And it's wonderful.
That sounds good.
It is real good. Keeks, next time you come, we'll take you to Capital Teas. It's great.
Okay, great. I have, like, really basic bitch tea, like, taste.
Well, they have some basic bitch teas, so.
Great. I know. I almost texted Kate today. What's China green tips, like, instead of China green tea? Because we have China green tips at work, and I'm like, no, that's, you could Google it. Don't ask Kate. Leave her alone.
Just the tips.
I didn't Google it.
literally just the tips.
Just the tips of the plants?
Yeah. I'm not kidding.
I don't know.
I want to Google what the point of that is.
Because
I don't know.
Because the leaves are younger and so they have a different, more mild flavor.
Oh. That's
no.
Google.
No, I'm serious. That's a real thing.
I totally believe you. Thank you, Kate. Sorry for not Googling it and still asking you anyway, even though I tried not to. I'm the worst.
Oh, it's Monday, guys. All right, so can we finally get to the Star Wars?
We sure can. So as I said, we are finally starting Aftermath by Chuck Wendig. We're reading the start of the book through the interlude on... How are we saying this?
I'm saying Nalal.
Nalal?
Yeah.
Through the interlude on Nalal, which is the interlude between chapters 9 and 10. So basically we're reading up to, not including chapter 10. And so... As we always do, I think we want to set the scene a little bit.
So Kristen's not confused.
Yeah, so Kristen's not... Well, I was going to say, Kristen, do you want to take a stab at it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say, Chuck Wendig, thank you for writing this. It's real good. I am so bad with names, so these first 9 chapters-ish have been a struggle, because we have a lot of different characters. I have a feeling they're going to converge at some point, because that's what the foreshadowing tells me. So that's exciting. But, yeah, there's a moody teen involved. There's all kind of people. So we're in the Outer Rim. We're on this planet called Akiva, and we got some of our old faves, but we're a couple months past Endor, and I think Wedge the opening chapter?
That is correct.
One of the opening chapters? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Little Wedge Antilles is like, what's going on over here? And then we find out there's a bunch of shit going on over here.
That was just an immaculate Wedge impression. I'm just impressed.
Let me live.
Okay, you can't see me right now, but I'm about to die like of suppressed laughter, so I don't just start screaming into the microphone.
I try my best, okay?
It's fine.
Is that not what happened?
No, that is all very correct. We're gonna go through, I think, all but one of the point of view characters, one by one this episode, so we can clear that up for you and anyone else whose head is spinning.
Thank you so much. It was also, like, nice in Portland this weekend, so I, like, read most of this in like one sitting, so
yes,
there you go.
That's real.
Don't do that.
there's one character that we're gonna save to talk about next time, just because that we get more of her next time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so yes, we are a few months post Endor, which is traditionally the point in the original trilogy where we demarcate the end of the Galactic Civil War, but
at least before the sequels came out.
Correct. But, you know, as the lovely tagline says, the war isn't over because we have to go on cleanup missions because the Empire's still hanging around and trying to maintain what tiny little grip they have on all the other planets. And so part of the reason why we're on Akiva is because Rae Sloane is convening her Council of Evil Dudes to see what they can do to maintain control. And
Rae Sloane. Sorry, I just had to interrupt with that.
We love Rae Sloane.
Exclamation.
I mean,
battle cry.
That's important. And Chris, I know you wanted to talk about how the Empire is doing these days.
Yeah, it's not doing great, Kate. Just in my best like news correspondent voice. Thanks, Kate. Empire's not doing great over in this side of town.
I mean, where's the lie?
Would you say like New Republic 2, Empire 0?
Oh, I thought you were going Electric Boogaloo there.
Oh, no. Sorry. I was making a Death Star joke, but it was really contrived and stupid, so
continue. No.
I mean, more so than it would have been if it had been New Republic 2 Electric Boogaloo.
No, that would have been funny.
Well, too bad. Dodge that bullet.
Electric Boogaloo jokes will never not be funny.
Oh my god, we're so weird today.
It's fine. We needed this, if you guys couldn't tell.
Yeah,
we've all had weeks. Chris literally got on the phone with me and was like, I haven't talked to you since you got back from Denmark. I was like, bro, we recorded last week.
Right. Like, what did we record? Oh, recorded the Rebels episode. That's
yeah,
right.
Man.
Okay, I finally remembered.
Good job.
Which is coming out before this one does. So
it is.
Vague references to it.
Woo!
But yeah, anyway, the Empire, they're not doing great. I mean, they're really, we see Rae Sloane trying to hold it together, but the impression that we're getting from pretty much everybody, including the Imperials at this point, is that the Empire is falling apart and hanging on by a thread. And one thing that just really struck me as kind of a really interesting dichotomy in these first chapters is the parallels between the Empire and the New Republic, and like kind of foreshadowing a little bit the dangers of a cult of personality, because we have Palpatine is dead. And at this point, there is nobody running the Empire because he didn't designate a succession plan and he didn't have anybody in charge who could have taken over. Like, maybe it could have been Tarkin had Tarkin not died on the first Death Star. But, like, without, you know, without the Emperor and without Vader, there's nobody who's really able to step up because power was so centralized in this one figure that there's no natural successor.
I have a question.
Yeah, and just say two baby points. Yeah, and we actually, like, hear that in the first chapter. Like, the little council of bad dudes come together, and one of them is like, you know, we can't, like, we need an emperor, like, this empire needs an emperor. And Rae Sloane's like, okay, well, like, if the council deems that necessary, we'll fucking figure it out, shut the fuck up.
Rae Sloane's like
so mad in this book.
Ray's just like, bitch, it's me.
Right?
You know, I love it.
It's so good.
I love it.
Wait, Kristen.
Yeah, and you tend not to have a succession plan when you're like, I'm going to live forever.
Yep, this is true.
Okay, that was actually my question, though, because I wanted to know how much you guys thought it was hubris versus anyone who could have been viable leadership just fucking died. Because, like, Palpatine, we know, and this is pretty indisputable, is, you know, he plays the long con. He's been setting this all up for himself for Lord knows how many years, because we don't know how old he is, like, creepy old. So, like you said, Tarkin could have been a viable choice. Vader could have been a viable choice. Luke could have been a viable choice had he turned. Like, I don't know if all his plans just fell through, or he was just like, ha ha ha, bitch, I can just sit here forever and ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it... Kristen, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I'm just, like, taking it kind of at face value, where he's like, I killed my master in his sleep, so I... And I got all of the knowledge about how to stay alive forever from him, so peace. I think that he, like, was so power hungry that he never set any of that shit up. And then, like, once, I mean, Vader died, I think he assumed it was going to be Vader, just because, like, there are two. But, yeah, obviously, like, they both got all fucked up around the same time, so that
yes.
did not work out.
You know, basketball dunking someone into the second Death Star really takes it out of you.
It's so true.
Sure does.
Yes. I think this is a really legit rating. Okay, cool.
I am going to agree with that and not say anything, because this is actually something that is discussed in Aftermath: Empire's End, the third book of the trilogy.
Oh god, I'm so
That's
excited.
The other reason we know this isn't really The Empire's End, because there's a third one called Empire's End.
This is true.
You
and
are.
And a non-surprising Kristen fun fact, they told us we were reading, the pod gods told me I was reading this sometime in the future, and I think it was like the middle of the night or something, or I don't remember, but I was like, there are three of these, I'm just going to buy all three of them, I don't know which one we're reading. I'll read these eventually.
God fucking bless. That's amazing. Well, sorry.
I'm going to, so it's fine.
You said the pod gods, and now I'm imagining Chris, like, hovering in a corner wearing, like, a long white angel robe or something, like, making spear fingers going, woo.
Dressed like Ahsoka.
Yes.
Ahsoka the White.
Yes. Correct. Anyhow.
Ahsoka the Gandalf, yes.
Oh my god.
Sorry. I know Kate's really sensitive about it, because Dave Floyd is a nothing. I'm not going to say anything.
It's fine. We talked about it. And the Rebels bonus, it's fine. Anyway.
Sure yeah, go back and listen to our Rebels bonus pod if you want to hear Kate be salty.
Or any pod if you want to hear me be salty.
This is true. That's accurate.
Jesus. Okay. All right. More questions, because I am full of questions today.
Who are you, Comrade Questions?
What the fuck?
It's an Archer reference.
Yeah, I know.
All right, whatever. Continue, Comrade Questions.
Oh my god. This is why, see, Chris, I anticipated this, hence me pouring an unacceptable to you amount of gin. Anyway.
I was really waiting for you to paint yourself into a corner there and say it was a lot of gin, but you anticipated. Well done. It's almost like we're married.
So smart, both of you.
I really hate you.
Kate, mostly. No offense, Chris.
Yeah, I know. So one of the questions I actually had in this section, speaking of Imperial Reach, is one of the things that I think it's Nora one of the things that they note is that there is this weirdly increased Imperial presence on Akiva, and it's not just the gathering of all the big baddies who are left in the Empire, it's just, you know, on the ground. And Singer, of course, runs directly into stormtroopers while he's drinking himself silly. But one of the things they say is that the reason why everyone's surprised that there is such a strong Imperial presence, especially after Endor, is that there's never really been a strong Imperial presence on Akiva, because it's an Outer Rim world and the Empire never really officially annexed it. And so I was thinking about this in comparison to Jellucan, which we talked about when we read Lost Stars, which of course was Thane Kyrell and Sienna Ree's home planet, again in the Outer Rim, was officially annexed by the Empire. So is this a question of resources having to be rerouted because the Rebel Alliance actually turned into a real thing? Or is it just that the galaxy is so fucking large that at a certain point you gotta fucking stop?
Did you guys know that the Empire loves to mine?
That's true.
Sure did, Kristen.
See every other book that we've read.
Wait, so is there no fucking mining on Akiva? Is that what you're trying to say?
I was saying that I think it's probably a resources thing. If there was anything worth having there, they would have yoinked it.
I think. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think it was just they didn't care. I mean, it's kind of like, is Tatooine technically part of the Empire? I don't think it is, because it's Hutt space.
Yes.
So I think it's just kind of like that, like one of those random planets.
Interesting. Okay, that was all. That was my question.
Aren't there Hutts and shit on this one, too?
There's not a Hutt, there's a crime lord.
There's a crime lord.
I don't know, it's Hutts were mentioned. When they were talking about the catacombs. Sorry.
Yeah, it was like there's a legend of a Hutt or something.
Yes. Sorry.
Places for Hutt sex. I hated it.
I know. Hutt breeding ground. Slimy Hutt breeding ground.
All right.
Also, sand reference was very early in this book.
Oh, I love it.
Of course, Chuck.
Chapter one.
A sand reference.
It's like page two.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was fucking great.
It was beautiful. But things that are not beautiful. So Chris, you're all about the government flaws this week, I guess. Because I know you want to talk about how the New Republic just kind of shot itself in the foot before it even got off the ground.
Oh, yeah. They really, I mean, you see it in this first interlude with Mon Mothma and Hostis and Oxy, who are her two advisors. Hostis being the viewpoint that eventually became the centrists, and Oxy being the viewpoint that became the populists, as we see from Bloodline by Claudia Gray in some of our first few episodes. I think episodes 4 through 8.
Correct.
And you see this debate taking place, and you see the populist view really winning of a very decentralized government with no, I mean, obviously I said decentralized, but with no centralized power to speak of. And kind of the building of this cult of personality around Mon Mothma to get things done, as opposed to institutions to get things done. And you see Hostis kind of warning that, like, if there's not a standing army, then there will be chaos. And Mon Mothma and Oxy kind of being like, no, we said we wanted, like, no centralization. We wanted less centralization. We wanted no dictatorship. And we're going to live that, which is very admirable. But knowing what we know now about what happened to the New Republic, you kind of look back at this moment and think, it feels like they could have done this differently.
Yeah, I got to that bit that you were just describing, that interlude, and Mon Mothma being like, I don't want to have an army. I want to demilitarize almost completely. And I was just like, no, 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 no. The First Order is just this giant, giant military fist, and you just, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder if the New Republic had kept a standing army and searched a little more aggressively for the Imperial remnant, like, what might have happened?
I think there's that, and maybe I'm just thinking of this because of what all bullshit has been in the news lately, but it felt, at least from Bloodline, that they were committees in the Senate, but not necessarily separate agencies. Like, there's no space FBI or anything like that. No, I'm serious. To be like...
No, I know. Sorry.
Or, you know, to be keeping tabs on the centrists who would eventually secede and join the First Order. Like, there was not really much of an indication of that, except for Leia doing her own investigation. And so it just... I guess they didn't want all this bureaucracy getting in the way of things. Like, I guess if you are ceding power to the individual planets, and you want them to have be as close, you know, in terms of being able to talk to the Chancellor as you possibly can. But what a giant mess that created. It's the ultimate small government problem.
Yeah, it's funny because you're clearly not supposed to like Hostis, and you're, like, supposed to side with Oxy in this particular debate. And I just like reading it, particularly since I've read it before, and particularly reading it the second time after we know what happened to the New Republic, I was just kind of like, but what if Hostis is right?
It's like Mon Mothma doesn't even know it's called Star Wars, and she's like, it's Star Peace now.
I know.
And you're like, no, still Star Wars.
Mon Mothma.
Sorry, Mon.
Mon Mothma just ruining everything, just like Disney. Not even knowing it's Star Wars.
This is why I poured myself extra gin today.
We love bits. spits.
Oh my god.
I'm losing my fucking mind. Yeah, I think you're right though, Chris. It's hard to be like, more military is good, but also we know it's happening. So it's happening. Fuck.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to getting more of the New Republic viewpoint, particularly when we start getting views from Akbar.
Ooh, Akbar's here? Oh fuck yes.
Love Akbar.
Would he say, would he say that the New Republic governing structure don't do it. Is a don't trap? Do it.
It's a trap.
You know, he might. He just might. We'll see. We'll have to see.
Kate, speaking of recurring themes within the Star Wars universe, such as war.
Such as traps.
such as traps.
Fuck.
Do you want to talk about PTSD? Because we get more of it.
Yay.
You talk. I'm getting more tea.
Okay. We just love talking about trauma because Star Wars is goddamn full of it. So thus begins the section of the pod where we go through and discuss our first impressions and what we know as of this point about almost every single one of the point of view characters. And I just want to preface this by saying that I've been following Chuck Wendig's blog for 1,000 years because he has a lot of really, really smart things to say about the writing process and the life of being a writer and how hard that can be and how joyful that can be. And if you aren't reading his blog and you enjoy his writing and especially his creatively profane tweets, I highly recommend it. It's called Terrible Minds, and just zip over right there and, you know, read about his pearls of wisdom. But anyway, from having followed his blog for so long, I know that his writing philosophy, and it's, you know, I'm kind of biased in saying it's a good one because it's one that I happen to agree with. But anyway, it's that characters drive everything. You know, if without character and knowing your characters really well and their motivations and their flaws and their conflicts, you can't have plot and you don't have a good book. So just being able to focus for a little bit on each of the characters, I think, is real important, especially when you're reading any of Wendig's writing. So, with that being said, back to trauma. So, we're seeing a lot of examples of people who have very, very PTSD-like symptoms. And the first instance we get of that is, of course, with Nora Wexley, where she has that moment trying to land on a Kiva. And she has this flashback to being in the second Death Star, literally in the guts of the thing, trying to blow it up. So she has this moment where she freezes, and that's just very, very in line with, of course, what we know about people with PTSD and what their experience is like.
Yeah, and one thing that was really striking to me about the writing of this scene was just how much more visceral her PTSD is than we see from something like Bloodline, where we talk about Leia's PTSD. Like, you really get the sense of how debilitating it is for her here.
Yeah, I would say the only other place that we saw it probably this viscerally was with Nash in whatever book that was.
Lost Stars by Claudia Gray. Okay,
sure. Yes, that one, Lost Stars by Claudia Gray, a book I enjoyed. but yeah, I mean, like, if anybody wants to go back and listen to those episodes, I mean, I think we did a pretty interesting job of kind of exploring that. But obviously, we get something a little bit different here, especially in the way that Wendig writes it, I think, is very interesting and super visceral and really just evokes, I think, a lot of emotions in the reader and really kind of makes you take a step back and go, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way he writes it is almost cinematic. You can see how that would play out on screen, just intercutting between Nora in the present and her in her Y-wing in the Death Star, just, you know, with just how claustrophobic she felt while she was in there, and like she was so sure she was gonna die, and she's just getting shot at by all these TIE fighters, and she's like, well, this is it. Cool story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting because it's, so far there's a really good balance, and it probably because we've gotten the most of Nora, I think, but there's just a really good balance of seeing how much her PTSD defines her, but also being a three-dimensional character and seeing her in the present.
Yeah, I was going to say, the things that Wendig really front-loads is that she is heavily affected by her experiences as a combat veteran, but also she's a mom, because it introduces Temin up front. But before we move on to him, can we talk about Singer a little bit? Singer, my new favorite trash son.
Sure. I also wanted to say Nora sounds like a really good pilot, which is cool. I love seeing good lady pilots.
And she's not dead.
She's super not dead.
Yeah, she definitely... one day somebody is going to like rank all of the pilots in Star Wars, not just like a random Twitter poll, but like just list out all the like pilots who we know are good. And I want to like have the definitive ranking of like who are the best pilots in the galaxy.
Can I just write that listicle and then get the most hate mail?
Oh, God. Yes. Can you imagine how much hate mail you would get?
I'm going to get punched in the face. Anyway.
Although I think you and I are in agreement that a white man is first, Twitter. So.
What?
I think you and I are in agreement that a white man is first, so.
Whoops.
So you would actually get less hate mail.
Oh, wow. Thanks
you'd just get hate mail from the people who actually matter instead of from the usual
suspects. I know, right? Fuck. Yes, I should just absolutely just make a thread and delete my Twitter and just, you know, never appear mute ever
everyone.
Again. Everyone. I know.
Kate quickly Googles how to mute everyone you follow.
How to mute real life. So Singer. I've been told.
What a trash baby.
I know. He's such a good trash baby. I've been told by numerous people that he is wonderful and just a fucking like dumpster fire in a great way. So speaking of trauma, who boy does he have a lot of it. So obviously the first time we see him, he is drinking away his, I don't want to say problems, because he's defected and really his only problem is just trying to forget all the horrible things he did.
Drinking away his pain.
There you go. I can words. Doing that.
You're so good at words.
According to grad school, I'm not. Anyway.
All right. Grad school can suck a dick. Sorry. Keep going.
You said it, not me. Guys, let me in next year. Anyway. Yeah. He's just very, very blatantly just sitting there, and his thoughts are really laid out for us. He just thinks, I am not a good person. I have done some horrible things. I'm just going to sit here and drink all the alcohols so I don't have to deal with myself.
He's very good at hand-to-hand combat, we learn.
He sure is.
Which is fucked up when you think about it, but you find yourself rooting for him at the moment because he's kicking some stormtrooper ass.
Yeah, he's like drunk and just like has this muscle memory to like just destroy people, which is awesome and frightening at the same time.
Yep.
He has a little riff that goes on about noses.
Yes, I enjoyed that because I'm a horrible violent person.
Yep. Wait, but one thing I really loved about Singer was just he's kind of a different character than we've seen before. Because, you know, we've seen the Imperials before. And mostly the Imperials we've seen before are like the honorable ones. And the ones who are either still with the Empire because they have honor, or who left the Empire because they have honor and they don't believe the Empire has it. Like, you know, your Iden Versios, your...
Thane.
Thane Kyrell, absolutely. Sienna Ree. Even Hask in his own fucked up way. Like, he thinks he has honor, though. Singer is kind of your... He's a different character than we see, because he's the Imperial who knew he was doing wrong the whole time and didn't care, and now they lost. And now he needs to live with that and not be in power.
Yep, totally. I mean, I'm going to do it again. I can compare a character to Kanan, because I can. But no, he's just kind of the inverse of Kanan. He ran away from an institution that he was his entire life, because it was collapsing around him and his life was going to be in danger. And Well, Kanan tries to be a giant dirtbag, but then he has these, like, moments of, oh, God, I have morals. I better do the right thing here. Sinjar's kind of the opposite, where he's just like, I don't want to have morals, but at the same time, I cannot let these stormtroopers murder all these, you know, hapless people in this bar, so I'm gonna just kill the fuck out of them. It's fun in that sense. And, you know, of course, because he reminds me of Kanan, he is now my favorite person in this book.
I really like the bartender.
Tag yourself on Pock.
I know. He just points to the fucking sign, no Imperials. Like, bro, I don't think that's gonna work necessarily, but like, good try.
Yeah, like, I see you have this sign. Has it ever worked for you?
It's also, he also reminds me of like that moment in Rush Hour, yes I'm gonna do this, where Jackie Chan's character is like speaking Chinese the whole time, and then he's like has to speak English, and Chris Rock is like, what the fuck, you can speak English? And he's like, you just assumed I couldn't. Like that moment where he's just like, where Pac is like, I don't understand basic, and I'm like, yes you do, man. It's great.
Yes, similar to, I know none of the characters' names in Black Panther, but does she speak English? I do when I want to.
Yes, correct.
The best.
So good.
Bam. Oh, I had a point. The point was, isn't Sinjar, he gets introduced, I forget what he is in the Empire, but it's something that we haven't really seen before.
He is a loyalty officer, is he not?
Yeah, what
he
the
is
fuck?
So he works at, I don't know if they've exactly told us this, but or if they're going to, but it's not a secret, he worked for ISB.
Oh, okay. Shit. Cool. He was deep in there then, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That makes sense.
Black Ops crapola.
No, yeah, he was, I don't know, he why was I'm he like... was the one who they embedded in Star Destroyers to like root out people who like didn't even realize they were having treasonous thoughts yet. Basically.
Jesus. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I knew that that thing existed, but I also saw it, and I was like, shit, dog, that's not great. Like, he is a dick. Like, he is not a good person. I mean, no, whatever. We'll get to the question of morality later in the book, I assume.
I'm sure, yeah.
Don't.
As we often do.
Don't answer this question if the books wind up going deep into it. But he, I was just wondering if he knew Yularen then. With all the other
I don't believe it is mentioned.
Well, darn.
I mean, that said, I read this before we knew that Yularen was the head of ISB. So.
Yeah, this is one of the first Star Wars books you read when you decided to.
It was. Yeah. I read this one pretty early. So okay. I certainly read it before Yularen was on Rebels.
Womp womp.
And before I read Thrawn. So who knows? Maybe he did know Yularen.
All right. Cool.
Although Yularen would have died 4 years before this, because Yularen died on the Death Star.
That's right, but I mean...
he would have known him before that.
I was about to say, like, do we know what Sinjar's length of service was?
I do not.
Okay, cool.
I mean, maybe we do in later in the book, but I do not.
I'm not, okay, got it.
Speaking of other fucked up shit...
Speaking of other trash babies...
Speaking of other trash movies, I think Kate wanted to talk about hashtag the moody teen.
Snap. Temin, aka Snap. I'm probably just only gonna call him Snap. When does he get introduced as that anyway?
I believe the next book.
Really?
I think Wedge calls him Snap.
Oh, does he coin the nickname?
I believe so.
Oh, that's cute. Except that I want to punch this kid in the face a little bit. It's fine. I don't enjoy children. So the fact that we have a 15-year-old in this book is not helping me out. I feel about as warm towards him right now as I did towards Ezra. But, you know, this is not uncommon knowledge if you've been listening to the pod. Anyway.
But that's the thing, though. You're not supposed to. Like, and that's, and I honestly, one reason I'm really excited to reread this book is because I enjoyed it, but it was definitely not my favorite book the first time I read it, because...
You were telling me it was kind of like how you felt about The Last Jedi the first time you saw it.
Yeah, it was so not what I expected, because like I said, I read this one pretty early, and you kind of expect it's going to be the same feel as Star Wars and as Return of the Jedi, and like this...
Or for example, like you read A New Dawn before this, yeah?
I think so, yeah. So, which like feels... you have your heroes and you have your villains.
Sure.
And... this was so much more complex than I expected, and particularly when I was reading it, I did not like Temin, because he was annoying, he was moody, like you said, he was very selfish, and it took me a while to realize, and now I'm really getting into it on the second read through, I wasn't supposed to like Temin. Like, I'm not supposed to like him as a person. I'm just supposed to understand him.
Sure. I mean, his background is really tragic. You kind of, when you start thinking about it, you kind of can't help but understand why he's such an asshole to his mom. Because one of the things that we haven't seen a whole lot of, I don't think, in reading these books is what gets left behind when these people go off to war. We hear all the time that, you know, of course, these people have families and whatnot, but we don't never get it from their perspective what it's like. And, dude, it's hard, especially when, I mean, how old was he when Nora left? He was, like, 12, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that sucks that you, like, you have no parents to raise you, and you get dumped off at your aunt's place, and it's just like, okay, so what am I? Like, thanks, Mom.
We've never gotten a view until now of the trauma of winning.
Ah, yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And the fact that Nora and Temin, by extension, are the people who won this war. And they need to, and they're expected, by nature of being the winners, they are expected to be able to pick up and go on with their lives.
Yeah, which is impossible because, I mean, Temin's fucking pissed at Nora, and I understand why, as a person who did not get parented by her parents, yay. And of course, Nora's come home with her own scars, a lot of them invisible, and it's probably going to be really difficult for them to understand each other.
Totally. I'm sure we're going to find out more later, but was she justified in drugging her own kid to try to get him off planet?
I don't know yet. I will say that I got to that part and I laughed hysterically because I'm an asshole, so.
Right?
I also laughed. She's like, God damn it, how do I play this stupid space piano?
I mean, it's interesting.
God kidnapped my kid.
I know, right? Fucking space piano. That honest to God made me laugh a little bit. I was like, hey, look at that.
It's a whole different view of motherhood though, right? Because like she's obviously a mother and like, I'm not, like, no one's gonna, like, pass judgment on mothers, but it's, like, this is not what we see as traditional Western-centric mother behavior. But, like, this is what she knows how to do is, like, see this problem, solve it, potentially with force, because she was in the military.
I mean, we're talking about models of motherhood. What the fuck models of motherhood do we even have in Star Wars? Like, minimal. So,
well, exactly.
Oh my god, Nora's an alive mom in the Star War.
It's a hard thing to do, apparently.
Right?
Not surprising.
Mm-hmm. Jesus.
As you guys can hear, if there's any extraneous dog barking that you hear on the pod, it's because I haven't been able to edit it out. We got a new dog on the floor, and it doesn't like anything.
What kind of dog?
And it is loud. I can't tell like what apartment it's coming from. I think it might be the Golden Shepherd, the oh my god, the Golden Shepherd, the German Shepherd puppy. But I think there's, I think it's not, because I've met the Golden. Oh my god, I just forgot. I met the German Shepherd puppy, and she's very nice. And I don't think, and I think she's on the other side of the floor. So I think this puppy is near us, and very loud, and loves to bark. And I'm like. Okay, it fine. I mean, it fine.
To be fair, the dog is me, just constantly screaming.
True.
Oh, it's. I will edit out what I can.
No, you're fine. I honestly didn't hear it.
It's totally fine.
Okay, cool.
Shall we talk about one of her faves, guys?
Oh, the best.
Rae Sloane, she's back, guys.
We need all the Rae Sloane ever.
Correct.
All the time.
Correct.
Give her a show. Give her a show.
Oh my god, the images of Rae Sloane being a fucking underappreciated, like, glorified cop in the Outer Rim during those years, and then, like, have her actually be, like, scheming, like, in the background would be amazing.
Oh, stupid question. Did we know that she didn't die on the second Death Star?
We did. Do you have, when we were at A New Dawn, did you get the version that's called Rise of the Empire that also has Tarkin in it?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I doubt it because you probably got it as an ebook.
Yeah, I got the Kindle. I always get the fucking ebook because otherwise I can't read.
That's fine. Just Anyway, for those of you who do have the Rise of the Empire omnibus that contains both Tarkin by James Luceno and A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller, who the creator of Race Alone, I think it's the last short story in mm-hmm. that book. There's three short stories in that book kind of interspersed between the novels. And the last one has to do with Rae Sloan in her Star Destroyer looking on during the Battle of Endor and seeing that they've lost. So, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, okay. So we, as in the universe, knew, but I did not know. Got yes, it.
That is correct.
And for if there are any listeners who haven't read the story and want to see if you can find it, I highly recommend it. It is called Levers of Power by Star Wars' very own Jason Fry, who is now getting his well-deserved minutes of fame for writing the newly released Last Jedi novelization.
Kiki, I'll scan the story sometime when I have time and send it to you because it's real good.
Okay, cool. I might be able to find it somewhere so the author gets money.
I mean, that's fine
too. Also fair.
Sorry, I'm just like, No, let fine. Me try to buy it first.
Yeah, just let me know. Anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the last time we saw Rae Sloane was in that story, but for those of us who don't have access to it, the last time we saw her was A New Dawn. So this is like from a new dawn. This is like 15-ish years after that, right, Chris? Because
yeah, I think we said that was about 10 years into the Empire.
It was definitely no. It's 6 years before Rebel starts.
Okay.
So 6 years, and then you get to Rebels, and then Rebels
was 5 years before Star Wars.
Right. So.
And this is 4 years after Star Wars, so it is 15 years.
Okay. Thank you for helping me with math, because I can't add.
Math.
I literally can't add. And the Rae Sloane we get here is, she's definitely still Rae Sloane, but she's 15 years older and wiser, and it really does show, I think. So I just wanted to talk about, as I burp, how her character is different, and what we can kind of extrapolate about what her character development and what she's gone through since we last saw her at the end of A New Dawn.
She's so salty.
I know, right?
She's like, everybody around me is incompetent and I'm fucking angry and I need to get this shit fixed now.
I know, which is fascinating and super awesome too, because, you know, last time we saw her in A New Dawn, she was basically a glorified lackey for Count Vidian, and she was still absolutely learning, and she was absolutely super ambitious, and you still see that here, but she was essentially just trying to get a handle on how the game is played, and now she knows. And now she knows she's fucking surrounded by idiots, and she's the best, because she is.
Well, she knows how the game is played, but that's because she lost.
That's true.
Because, like...
She says that, too.
Yeah, like, because her... You know, last time we saw her was at the end of New Dawn, you know, cheersing with Baron Dantha, and... That clearly didn't work out well for her. Like, she was, as you said, given glorified cop duty. And when she was in the midst of a promising rise, had she, you know, maybe stuck to less auspicious methods of gaining power.
Right, it just sounds like she pissed off all the wrong or all the right, depending on how you look at it, people on the way, because... You know, she has that kind of personality where, you know, she sees what she wants and she fucking goes for it. And that is frowned upon in a lot of places in our real world because she is a black woman who has independent thoughts. God fucking forbid she express them. But in the Empire, you know, it's like you fucking pay your dues and then you get to cash in at the end. She didn't want to do that. She was like, I'm ready for this. And it seems like she fucking tried to go for it and got smacked down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now it's like there's no bank if we're going to continue the metaphor.
Yeah. No, that's real. So, anyway, where's my novel or TV show or literally goddamn anything about Rae Sloane in these 15 years? Because I want it now.
I want Give me Rae Sloane every Rae after Sloane. This. After Aftermath.
Why not both, Chris?
I mean, sure.
Why not both?
At the same time.
Why not both?
I want all of it.
There's never enough Rae Sloane.
Yeah. Always just call out at Southern Cynic, because she's the biggest Raceland stan.
Yes.
Absolutely.
As she should be, because Raceland's the best, but...
Absolutely.
It's... I say them both in one breath. Raceland slash Southern Cynic.
This is true.
I mean, literally same. Longtime listener Southern Cynic, who loves Raceland more than probably the entire Star Wars fandom put together, which is awesome, because Raceland is a badass, and we should all want to be here when we grow up.
Yep.
Yup.
And that seems like a good place to leave it. So thank you all for joining us on this episode of the Book Wars Pod as we got ourselves acquainted with what's happening in the galaxy at the beginning of Aftermath.
And yes, we know we didn't discuss Jass yet, but that's the character.
Yes, we're not ignoring Jass. We just, the chapters that were selected for this one only gave us one chapter worth of Jass, so we wanted to wait until we got a little bit more of a view of her.
Yeah, there's not a lot to her character development besides how she is on the job, which doesn't really tell us a lot right now.
Yeah, well, we're gonna get to her, don't worry.
Yes.
We're not ignoring her. Anyway, next episode we're gonna be continuing with Aftermath, reading chapters 10 through 17. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr. Book Wars Pod on all of those platforms. Email us bookwarspod@gmail.com. rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, both to the Book Wars Pod and to the Tashi Station Radio mega feed. Donate to the Tashi Station Radio Patreon. It helps us cover our hosting and production costs so we can continue to do the show that we love and bring you this content. Until next week, our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. For Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris. Thank you so much for listening to the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm not doing it.
Yo, fuck you, man. I'm slurping, Chris.
Check, 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 check. Which way is up? Which way is up? Not that way. That way is down. This way is up. Is that better?